We want to thank everybody for coming out to see the show tonight. We hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for staying for the talk back. My name is Alec White.
My name is Jamie Patterson.
We were the dramaturgs assigned for this production of Mother Teresa's Dead. We're going to be giving you guys some brief information of stuff that we learned. We're going to take you through the talk back with some Q&A time for the cast and crew. Like I said, this is just some brief information. We did a lot of studying. We put a great study guide together that we'd love for you guys to check out. You can check out that at acu.edu/cornerstone. Click on the Mother Teresa is Dead icon on the right-hand side of your screen, and that'll take you through some great pages, our study guide, some great videos and facts. And also, we have a live blog here tonight that's monitored by theater faculty member and our dramaturgical advisor, Ms. Carrie Hatfield. So if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to post via the blog, feel free to do so. Also, this information is in your program. For those of you who don't know what a dramaturg is a professional position within the theater that deals mainly with the research and development of plays. So any questions that the cast or crew might have had about the show itself, Helen Edmondson, India, we were there to help research and try and get them the clearest answer as possible. I did some information on Helen Edmondson. Helen Edmondson was born in 1964 in Liverpool, England. She studied drama at Manchester University. She also was a tutor in drama. After that, she went on to form the Red Stockings Theater Company. She also formed her own female agitprop group, the Red Stockings, and she did work specifically for that theater company. In the early 90s, she came into some acclaim with her play Flying, but in 1993, she had real critical acclaim with her show, The Clearing, which debuted at Bush Theater. From there, she went on to become a professional screenwriter and actress. She also did some dramaturg work herself. In the early 2000s, she joined up with the Shared Experience Theater Company, doing shows specifically for them, also being praised for her adaptation work of novels into the stage, Anna Karenina and War and Peace, just to name a few, also the children's book Quorum Boy. In 2002, her show Mother Teresa is Dead premiered at the Royal Court Theater in London to rave reviews. Herself and the show have gone on to win numerous awards, being revived in London in 2005, and so graciously coming across the pond for your viewing pleasure here tonight.
I did research on Mother Teresa's personal life. Many of you may know the name Mother Teresa, but may be unclear about who she was exactly or how big of an impact she made on the world. For centuries, the church had helped those in need, but Mother Teresa started an order called the Missions of Charity, who would actually live among, dress like, and serve the poorest of the poor. In 1952, she established her first home for the dying in Calcutta, and by the late 1970s, 158 missions of charities had been established across the world. By the time of her death, on September 5th, 1997, Mother Teresa had established an order that was now numbering 4,000 sisters in 5 continents. 8 years after her death, the book Come Be My Light was published. Some of you may have read it. If you have, you know that it was a collection of letters that Mother Teresa wrote to her religious superiors through the course of her ministry. And these letters revealed that from the time Mother Teresa started her ministry up until the time of her death, that she was unable to feel the presence of God in her life. During her years of torment, she wrote that she could find peace in believing that she could actually feel the abandonment of Christ on the cross, and that she could truly empathize with the poorest of the poor who also felt abandoned.
I'm going to start off this section about India with a quote. This is from the Brazos Theological Christian Review of 1st and 2nd Peter. The quote, "We learn to accept political, social, and personal sin as ingredient to the fabric of everyday life. Greed is normal. War is normal. Torture is normal. Violence is normal. Disproportionate wealth is normal. Poverty is normal. Homelessness is normal. All such things sooner or later merge into the even tone of life as we know it. This is the real world." This quote is basically describing modern-day Gentiles, but I think this quote justifies not only the state of America, but also the Republic of India. We do see some harsh realities that Edmondson points out in the play, specifically about the begging situation. It is sad to know that a large majority of the working class is below the poverty line, and begging is seen as an everyday thing and as part of everyday life in India. A lot of the beggars are being controlled, or from research that I've researched, a lot of the beggars are controlled by gang members. So any profit that comes in is just personal profit, which is sad to know. There are websites specifically designed to alert and inform foreigners and Westerners of the begging situations, what to do, what not to do, what to give, what to do in an emergency situation. And also Edmondson herself has traveled to India and experienced a begging situation. On the opposite end of the spectrum, we also have the issue of orphans and orphanages. Did you know in 2005, UNICEF released an estimate that 25,700,000 children between the ages of 0 and 17 were orphans? I can only imagine what that number is like today, but those are the most recent stats I could find. Another one from UNICEF. In 2007, it was reported that 90% of mothers cannot afford to keep their children within the first year of birth, leading to major increases in the orphanages. Thank goodness for organizations like Oxfam India and Care International, who are very established organizations within the country of India. But a lot of reasons why these little orphanages don't make it or can't make it sometimes is because there's not a lot of funding from the country of India. And since India has a weak police force, a lot of things can happen that don't need to good organizations.
The ACU freshman reading book this year was Follow Me to Freedom. I see some theater freshmen still in here, and maybe some Cornerstone students still in here. I'm not sure how far you guys are along in the book. Have you guys finished it? Or yes, okay. So in the book, a lot of the themes that John Perkins and Shane Claiborne talk about, we are honored to have at lectureship this year, if some of our adults were here for lectureship. They actually discuss a lot of themes that are very relevant to the discussion that Mother Teresa's Dead provokes. Shane Claiborne went to India. He lived and learned with Mother Teresa. And in the book, Shane actually quotes a conversation he had with a reporter after her death. The reporter asked him, "Is the spirit of Mother Teresa going to live on?" He replied, "The spirit of Mother Teresa died a long time ago. What people love about Mother Teresa is the spirit of Jesus in her, and that's going to live forever. This is the work of God, and so it's God's responsibility to prosper it or end it. In either way, we rejoice, because we know this is about God's work." Similar to Jane's feelings about society, Shane says, "We'd rather keep to the daily grind and the meaningless toil that is familiar and humdrum, rather than have our rhythms broken." He argues that our God is a God of beautiful interruptions. He stopped to wash his disciples' feet and heal the sick. In the play, Jane struggles between her family commitment and social responsibility. John Perkins argues, "You can't be a great leader if you can't guide your own family with love and honor. That's how we end up with the concept of the Trinity. God the Father did not lead alone. He did so in the context of family." Shane Claiborne, on the other hand, argues that family can become an idol. He says, "We justify comforts and luxuries that we could never justify for ourselves, all in the name of family. We have to extend beyond biological family." At the end of the play, Voss tells Jane that when she goes home and leaves India, that no real change will occur in her life or in the children's lives at the orphanage. In the book, John and Shane agree that short-term volunteers create instability for poor communities, and that while a short-term experience may be great for an individual's formation, that it has little lasting impact on the people they leave behind.
So again, just a brief overview of some information that we learned. Please go check out the websites. Please feel free to leave any questions on the blog. I'd like to, at this time, ask the cast and director if they'd like to come up to the stage for the talkback presentation. Cast, right?
Okay.
So what this is just, again, just some time for some questions that the audience may have. We have some questions to get the ball rolling.
Great. This is a quote from Mother Teresa. "People are hungry for the word of God that will give peace, that will give unity, that will give joy. But you cannot give what you do not have. That's why it's necessary to deepen your life in prayer. Silence of the heart is necessary so you can hear God everywhere, in the closing of the door, and the person who needs you, and the birds that sing, and the flowers and the animals." Jane tells Mark about her desire to pray, even though she has no spiritual belief that we know of. Why do you think that so many people feel the need to be part of a greater calling and to help those in need?
I think that everyone everywhere has a desire for something. We all have this longing, this sort of uncomfortable emptiness. I mean, it's the subject of so many books, plays, theories, and And I think that that we all try to find the answer, and we try to find the completion in a bunch of different ways. And I think that a lot of what Jane says is sort of the peace that she's found, acknowledging that there's something bigger than us, and really just sort of taking a step back and seeing where we fit in the fabric of everything, and not being scared by that, but being comforted. And I think that it's so important to her to have found this little bit of hope that she just wants so desperately for the person she loves to experience that with her and to have it for himself.
I also have another question to Dom. Dom, would you discuss Voss's views on charity, and what is your own sense of this?
I agree very much with what Voss says on how it is a responsibility, just knowing from myself. And when he says that whole thing about that news report made me cry today, tomorrow I'll give them some money, or tomorrow I'll forget them again. And, you know, admittedly, that's how I am. When I see those, you know, Christian children's funds, you know, I feel extremely empathetic towards it, but then I find myself, you know, not thinking about it the next day, and I feel terrible about that. But, which is why I understand where he's coming from, when he makes it a responsibility. That makes it something where you can't shy away from it, because emotions come and go, but a responsibility is more concrete, and I feel I understand what he's saying there.
Is there anybody in the audience who has any questions that they'd like to ask at this time?
Yeah. I guess this is kind of for Michael. There's the part where you bring up September 11th, right? And I don't entirely understand why. I realize that did have an extreme global impact, but your character being English wasn't exactly as personal, I guess, as it would have been for the average American. And just wondering where that's coming from, that you are so horrified by his response to it.
I mean, I don't think you have to be American to be devastated by that event at all. And
sorry. And then the response that Voss has, then talking about how that's going to change your country. So then it is bringing it directly to England instead of America. Is that whole... Yeah, the whole bringing in September 11th to... I guess it was kind of the writing. Bringing in September 11th as a point in between two characters, neither of which are American.
Yeah. I think the reason why Helen Edmondson decided to incorporate that was because of how much of a response the whole world had to that kind of event. You know, you don't have to be American to feel the tragedy that occurred, you know, in our country. You can feel that all over the world, like how we feel, you know, sympathy or empathy from terrible things that happen in other places in the world, you know, because we all have that empathy towards one another.
I think it also kind of reminds me, I remember around the time that it happened, America started really wanting to know who our allies were. You know, we had the whole freedom fries, French fries thing. And so I think that I feel like England and America were kind of buddy-buddy at the time, and that sort of impact said, well, if they can attack America, they can attack England. You know, we're linked.
Yes, sir.
Quick comment and a question. In response, it's because only 60 countries lost people. So there's a large tragedy, not just two. The question I have for Melvin and Michael. So what do you think happened to Jane and Mark?
After
the
when?
Fight?
Before or after? I love how Helen Edmondson leaves us at this sort of, well, what are you going to do now? And I think that they could definitely go two very different ways, and I think it all really depends on the little choices that they make in their relationship. And am I going to make the small sacrifices that it takes to make this relationship work, and is he going to reciprocate, and are they going to put each other's needs first and make it a point to listen, even when they're not in an extreme situation in a foreign country? I like to think that they went back, maybe got some counseling, and worked through it, had some tough spots, but worked through it. That's what I like to think. So.
I agree completely.
Coward.
Already on the right track.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have any blog posts?
More globally, and that in more than just mending their relationship, that they actually move through the world in different ways because of how close they came to losing everything.
Mm. Yes.
There's a lot of bullying that goes on, right? I mean, interpersonally, it's very interesting to watch. I guess Jane. Caught in the middle of several of these very brash, manipulative kind of conversations, everyone pressing her to make their decision or whatever. Does the play ask us to look at that almost beyond the interpersonal? It's a play about nations, it's a play about people coming from different countries, and the way we charitably listen, I think was the way you described it, and the way we completely fail to listen. Coming when the play comes, this sounds like, if not, it's an allegory, but do you feel the political kind of intonation of the bullying or the listening here? Mm.
You know, last night we talked a little bit about exploitation, and I think that's probably what's key right there, is how much each individual is exploiting the other. And I think on the larger context, countries that exploit other countries to get what they want. So I think we're seeing what Edmondson does is bring that huge political machine down into a personal story. And we're seeing those same ideas happening in this very personal way that we can really relate to, rather than the machinations of the large global, how one country treats another. We can understand it better when we see Jane being manipulated or exploited.
Hmm. Yes. Very unintellectual comments. Adam, I thought you did an excellent job in your characters, choosing the people for characters. Another thought, I'm glad you played everything straight because your dimples would have ruined it.
And this woman has seen every play we've ever done. She can speak with authority.
And I was so glad to see your long hair actually come down. And that it wasn't a wig.
Having been a musician all my life, I think in terms of music, and I was completely frustrated because the play ends on a dominant chord. And we want 5-1, we want resolution. Mm-hmm. And there's no resolution, and that is, I'm sure that was purposeful. That was on purpose.
I do think the play really wants us to leave asking more questions. And she refuses to tie that bow and wrap it up and let us feel comfortable.
Yeah. And that goes back to your point, and some point that was made here earlier about there was something about the people that were troubled and everything, and what they were writing, it made me think that perhaps we should put in a law somewhere that troubled people should not write plays.
Oh, no!
Or books.
Oh, but those are the best ones!
No Shakespeare, I can tell you.
No Shakespeare.
I believe we had a blog question from earlier.
We do have a blog question. How do you know who to root for if the characters all good or all bad?
who are the bad guys and who are the good guys?
Can I take that, Francis?
I think Helen writes this play in a really great way, and I think that each of the characters have just a little tidbit of truth, and there's a part of them that we can all connect with and see where they're coming from, if it's just for a moment or, you know, for their worldview or whatever. And I think that's how life is. You know, we are all encounter people that are going to have different views, different stances on things, and we may not agree, or we may, and we have to figure out a way to connect with them and, you know, to, yeah.
I think what we've all talked about, she very purposely did not choose a person who's going to be the person to identify with. She is saying that each of the four has moments of truth they speak, and each of the four are misguided in some way, so that you can't say this is the person. Instead, she is forcing us to make choices ourselves rather than answering those questions for us.
Yes.
For Dom, do you think loss at the end began to have some more?
Can you repeat the question just
yes,
for the?
Yeah, the question was asked if towards the end of the play, Srinivas is feeling a bit more compassion in just
in,
the situation.
In that, it seemed to me he went and found Mark and came up with this idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that's the arc of Srinivas, even though if it's not, you know, him fully, you know, being the most compassionate person ever, even if there's just that little hint there, I feel like, you know, all you need is just that seed planted, and maybe something will grow, or maybe not, who knows. So I definitely feel like he has hope in his future.
I wonder even who, if it's Voss or Mark, that makes the first move to reconcile.
Yeah, you know, and that's a good question to ask. We chose to obviously indicate that it was Voss. The way that the play is written is that you actually only see one scene at a time. So I imagine that they did it on a revolve or with scenery that came on and off. So you would only see on stage the living room, and it would go off, and you would see just the garden, and then you would see just the upper room. But the way we've planned it with Gary's beautiful set, we had to have Voss go off one place and then choose for him to come and find Mark in another place. So it does appear that Voss is the one who makes that bet. The play does not really indicate that. The play indicates that they both come in from off stage, and we don't know who really approached whom.
But they both are in agreement to try that.
Yeah.
You have time for one more question?
Anybody else have a more philosophical question? I was just going to ask, what went into the decision not to use British dialects for these two characters?
Yeah, that was my choice, so I guess I'll take that. Well, you know, knowing that our the majority of our patrons were going to be our cornerstone freshmen, and I really wrestled with this idea, and Helen Edmondson wrote this play for a British audience who would hear a British dialect and it would sound very normal to them. They would have no leap in getting past that. Jane comes from Northern England, kind of the Billy Elliot, if you know that musical or movie, with that kind of in that coal mining area. So she would have a little bit of a different sound, a little less sophisticated sound. But they would be very familiar with that. I was concerned that our freshmen would have, and then maybe others of our, not just freshmen, but maybe other of our, but knowing that they would be the majority of our audience, might have trouble making the leap and hearing that connection and really seeing this and being able to personalize this, being able to identify with these characters, that it might be easier for that to be at arm's length for them. So I began toying with the idea of what if we use standard American, because they're all from England except for Voss, and if Voss is the one who really sounds very different, because that's the way the play is. In the play, it's Rinnevoss who is different from anyone else. And so in doing that, I thought maybe we could identify much more quickly and we wouldn't have that leap to make.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for coming out to the talk back tonight. We hope you have a safe and happy night.